And what's up, podcast people and soundtrack geniuses around the world? You're listening to The Soundcast, the official podcast of TrackSounds.com. And on this podcast, we talk all things film, television, and video game music. I am Christopher Coleman, and joining me for this episode is...
Kristen Romanelli of Film Score Monthly Online.
I'm Dane Walker, composer, in parentheses.
Today is Monday, October 15th, 2018, and this is episode 119 of The Soundcast, where we review Justin Hurwitz's original score for First Man.
You can find all episodes of The Soundcast at thesoundcast.com or iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and on Acast. Wherever you do listen, please give us a rating and a review, as it really helps us to know that you were listening and helps us make the show better. You can send us your feedback at soundcast@tracksounds.com, or you can use our SpeakPipe widget. And you can reach us on Twitter at TrackSounds or on Facebook.
Welcome, Dane, and welcome, Kristen. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Doing well.
Good. How well?
I'm doing very well.
You had to think about it to quantify it, I guess.
I lost my notes all of a sudden. They just disappeared.
Wait, like, where are my notes? How am I? What did my notes say?
I made fun of Kristen for not knowing where her notes in. Now
see?
I can't find my notes.
See? I am contagious.
Now I'm while hacking. He looks for it, now I'm coughing.
While he looks for his notes, how are you, Kristen?
We'll see if this turns into bronchitis. That'll be fun.
Bronchitis. Oh, bronchitis. Oh, we don't want either bronchitis or bronchitis.
My favorite, not a dinosaur.
It took me a second. That took me a half a second.
Well, that was a dad joke. Don't want
dinosaurs
if I ever heard one.
Or bronchitis around here. Well, tonight we're going to be talking about the recently released film and original score, mostly First Man. And IMDb's very short synopsis of First Man is a look at the life of the astronaut Neil Armstrong and the legendary space mission that led him to become the first man to walk on the moon on July 20th, 1969. The film was directed by Damien Chazelle, who also directed La La Land and Whiplash. It was written by Joss Singer and J.R. Hansen. It stars Ryan Gosling, Clara Floyd, Jason Clarke, and a number of others. And the score is composed by his continual collaborator, Justin Hurwitz. The film has only done okay at the box office, 16 million domestic, 24 worldwide, 24 million that is. It's got an 88 from the critics on Rotten Tomato and 61 from regular folks on Rotten Tomato. Metacritic's at 84. Soundtrack Dreams gave it a 76, the score that is, a 76 out of 100. And a new review site that I've never heard of before, but hey, we're going to give you a shout out right here, right now, called Xanaboard Reviews. Gave it an 8 out of 10.
Xanaboard.
For the score. Xanaboard. Yes, I have never heard that one before.
I want to play that video game.
Xanaboard?
Yeah, doesn't it sound like it's a nice, like, game you'd go play at the arcade?
Like Galaga?
Yeah, like Xanaboard.
I guess so. I guess it could be. Yeah. But I have no idea what that means.
I'm sorry, I just derailed the conversation.
That's okay. They got a wonderful shout out, whoever they are. I looked on their site. There's no indication of who's writing the reviews. Nothing. It's just like, here we are. Here's our reviews.
I believe it's Xano.
It could be.
It's Xano's board, so.
It could be. There all isn't right. Even a discussion board there, so I don't know. I don't all know right. How that works. But it must mean something. We're going to talk about the film a little bit, just for some context, talk about our expectations. We'll talk about the film a little bit itself. And then we'll get into spoilers where we talk more in depth about the film and Justin Hurwitz's original score. We're going to end with kind of sharing where we think, First Man falls into the spectrum of the many, 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 many films or miniseries that have covered a a fragment of the story, of the space race story from the U.S. perspective. So let's talk about our expectations to start. Kristen, what were your expectations going into this, and when did you actually see the film?
I saw the film a couple of weeks ago. It was they're doing like a whole spate of screenings in my area, but they're all like running at the same time, so scheduling's really weird. Expectations pretty high. Damien Chazelle has set a pretty high bar for himself.
Yeah.
Whiplash was great, and La La Land, I was one of the people who didn't fall into the whole La La backlash.
So oh, yeah, me either. I love that movie.
I thought it was great. So, yeah. Plus...
High expectations.
Yeah, high expectations. Although I was curious, because this is the first one he didn't write himself. So taking somebody else's script. But the screenwriter does have a pretty good collection going, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Dane, what about you?
I expected it to be good. I'm a huge fan of the Apollo space history, and I think the stories that surround that history deserve to be seen on screen because they are epic. And I'd like to see a space series done about the Russians too. I think that'd be really good too.
I'm sure someone would do that.
Incredible. But I was excited to hear what Hurwitz would do with the score, and I wanted to see he has skills, so I wanted to see how he would use them.
Yeah.
But yeah, all those combined, I thought, oh man, we're going to get a unique take on this story. So yeah, I was excited.
Yeah, I was pretty hyped for this movie too. I'm always up for a space race film, and this looked like it was going to be, a very good entry that could sit right alongside Apollo 13 and From the Earth to the Moon and so forth. And I was very curious at what, as you said, as Hurwitz, how he would approach this, because I was expecting a more adventurous, kind of inspiring sort of story. So I was like, man, how is Hurwitz going to tackle that? I've just not heard him do that before. So how will he do it? So those were my expectations, and very high. And that leads us into, well, what was our reaction to the film as a whole? Dane, what about you?
I sat through that film going, wow, it wasn't what I expected at all. And it moved me in a way that I wasn't expecting just from the beginning. It's kind of, for me, it was a bit like Dunkirk, right? Like Dunkirk was a very claustrophobic telling of a war and a battle, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. This was like that. You felt like you were stuck inside that lunar rover. You were stuck inside every one of those missions and you couldn't get out. I literally felt trapped in my seat the whole movie. And I want to find out. I didn't do enough research before this, but I wanted to find out, did they shake that much? You know, there was so much shaky cam. I'm like, yeah. did they really shake that much? Or is it just shaky cam plus the shaking, you know?
I wouldn't be surprised if it shook that much.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just made you feel like that was a bucket of bolts and they were lucky to be alive.
Pretty much.
Man, I mean, it was powerful. It was a powerful film to watch. And I watched it with my wife and she commented afterwards. She's like, I wasn't expecting to cry, you know, it just ripped you emotionally right from the beginning. And it was such a unique telling of this story to take it from the different ways we've been told the story down to the very micro element of one man.
Yeah.
Who he was, how he felt, what he had experienced, what he was going through and all of those different things. And the family around him too.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So I did think it was a hair too long, because by the time I got to the moon landing, I was like, let's just land the thing, you know? I mean, not that I didn't think that sequence was amazing. I thought there was no sequences I would want removed. However, emotionally, I was spent by the time we got there. But yeah, it was a powerful film.
Kristen, what about you? What was your general reaction?
It's funny that you say it was a hair too long, because it's actually quite a bit shorter than most awards season's films are now.
I don't know what the really? What was the running time.
It was enough for me to get that $4 parking at the Landmark Center.
Let's see. I'm looking it up right now. It is 2 hours, 21 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty long.
It's longish, but, you know, I feel like so long as it's below the 3 hour mark during this season, we're good.
Yeah.
So long as I can get my $4 validated parking, I'm happy.
Gotcha.
If I'm not paying $20.
So what was your reaction to the film itself?
So I'm a big fan of those really introspective, existential, meditative movies. So that's right up my alley. So that really spoke to me. However, I did have sort of an issue with sort of the time lapses. I wasn't able to follow the time lapses pretty quickly. You know, it would feel like maybe a couple days later, but turns out it's a couple years later.
It did jump a lot.
It did lose me a little bit there, but I did love the character aspects from Neil, from Jan, and their family. From Buzz Aldrin kind of being depicted as a dick.
It's like, really, Buzz?
I actually thought that was kind of funny. They chose a really good actor for that.
It's like, wow, I just can't look at Buzz the same ever again.
But yeah, I think they really, I liked how they put a focus on the human cost of the Apollo project and what they were trying to achieve philosophically and scientifically, and what that meant to Neil Armstrong, as opposed to what it meant for someone who was more outgoing, like Aldrin.
So that's true.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a great deal, except for that whole timing thing, which completely threw me at points.
Yeah, they could have handled that better. I agree.
Yeah, I was just like, where are we? When are we?
Yeah, it's like, oh, pregnant. Oh, baby. Oh, she's older now.
Like, I mean,
yeah,
they just suddenly they really that baby's really big.
Yeah. Well, I found myself slightly disappointed, to be honest, and it's mostly due to my expectations, which not only were they high, but for the type of movie I thought it was going to be, based on the trailers. The trailers are, you know, it's all the space stuff. So my expectations were along the Apollo 13 line, maybe not quite that far, but in the, closer to that than what it ended up being.
So you weren't expecting like the whole Gemini buildup, and
well, no, just not in terms of the timeline, but in terms of they were talking about, it was about Neil and about his inner struggles in context of the bigger we're going to the moon, where like Apollo 13 didn't deal too much with anyone's inner struggles too much. It was just, how do these guys come together? How did they go to the moon? How did they get back? It didn't dive too deeply into anyone's psyche, but this movie was about his psyche. And I just wasn't prepared for that. And so I came out as we're going through the movie, I found myself kind of just being really overwhelmed and kind of depressed. I'm like, man, this is, you know, this is deep. And this guy really went through it, and he really, you know, really had some struggles. So I came out a little bit disappointed, because I think just personally I was looking for something a little more uplifting and a little more, oh, this is so great, and man, they're fantastic, and oh man, they did such a good job. He's such a hero. And not that I don't think that, but that really wasn't what it was about so much. And then I watched it on IMAX, which I was instructed that, hey, you got to go see this movie on IMAX screen. So I made sure I saw an IMAX, and the shaky cam, and I'm not talking about the action stuff. I'm talking about shaky cam just going through the house.
Yeah.
And just going to the pool. And I'm like, oh my gosh, please stop with the shaky cam. It was so distracting. And on a big, humongous screen, it was just like, oh my gosh, I can't. And the close-ups, it's like close up. It's like, come on, give me something. Step back a few steps. Give me a medium shot or something. Mm-hmm. It was, so all of that mixed together on IMAX screen and all that, it was a little bit disconcerting, if not annoying at times.
I didn't have that issue. Hmm. The screen was probably significantly smaller.
Yeah, it's probably a better watch on a smaller screen, I have to say. Although, you know, the space stuff, the moon stuff, the launching, all that, that's all worth seeing.
In IMAX?
On IMAX, I would say. I mean, I wasn't like, oh, I mean, there wasn't, I mean, it didn't like ever fill the IMAX screen. So I'm like, I thought they must have shot some with IMAX cameras, but no, because they never filled the whole screen. So I don't know why people were telling me to go see it on a real IMAX screen. It was still big, but it wasn't like the Dark Knight, you know, expand to fill the screen. I was a little bit disappointed. I have to admit, it was just my own expectations being high, and for the kind of movie that it ended up being, that's not what I was expecting it to be.
One of the first things I did react to, and I was remiss in not mentioning this, was not the score, but the sound mm-hmm. editing of this. Mm. They did a tremendous job with, yep. I mean, not just like the roar of the Saturn V rocket or anything. I mean, like they're inside the capsule, mm-hmm. and you can hear the creak of the metal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh my gosh.
It just creaks and groans, and you can hear like a rattle of a screw, and you're thinking like maybe you shouldn't be hearing something that loose inside
of
this capsule.
Yeah, that rivet. They focused on that rivet at one moment, and you were like, that thing's going to bust. Even though you know the whole story, you're like, right. they're going out. It's happening now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So that really, really helped with that tension of, shit, this is really a dangerous thing that you're doing. You're hurling yourself out of the atmosphere and towards a lifeless rock. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very true. Very true.
So, yeah, I found all of the sound work really tremendous.
Oscar.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. Well, let's go and move on to our general score reaction with no spoilers yet. Kristen, what did you think about, what was your reaction to Justin Hurwitz's score?
You know, I liked it at first, and that Justin Hurwitz is a really interesting composer to watch. Mm-hmm. Since he really only has these three major things, and you can kind of watch his progression as a composer, and you can see him go from like this jazz big band thing to sort of a swing but with more lyrical aspects into this other, into First Man, which is almost entirely lyrical. And the rhythmic parts of it are so much more precise than what we're used to from him. So it's a really interesting thing to listen to and to watch. So coming out of the theater, my first reaction was, wow, that's pretty nice. And I had taken some notes on, you know, what appeared where. And, you know, there's a ton of repeated motifs. And then when you get toward the end, they start layering on top of each other, that old technique. So I started to appreciate that more when I started listening to the cues on their own when I got home and following along with my notes. But I feel like there's a lot of layers there. There's a lot to appreciate. But I probably have more to say in spoiler sections.
Okay. All right. Dane, what about you? What was your score reaction?
Well, I listened to the score album before I went into the movie, which is...
You did?
I did. That's very unusual for me. I don't do that, but this time I did. And I think it's beautiful. And I thought it was beautiful in the film, too. I thought it was spot on. And it set the mood right from the beginning, and really aided the narrative. I think the only thing I thought about it was, is it going to stop? Is it going to stop doing this? Is it going to stop making me feel this way? But it's not, I don't mean that as a knock on it. It's a beautiful score. And I think he did a phenomenal job tying things together, and taking advantage of the story and finding musical highlights in the story to draw out and then basing the score off of that, which I thought was, I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah. Hmm. One of the big elements of the score was this aspect of grief. And
it was definitely grief stricken.
That was sort of like the heaviest element of it. And that just kind of kept on like being very prominent in all aspects of it.
That it was. I found that very heavy. It put a heaviness over it.
They did it with a theremin, which is very light.
I'll talk more about that when we get to spoilers. I guess, again, same. My reaction to the score is the same as to the movie. I was expecting something different. So I found myself a little disappointed. Not that I think it's an inaccurate score or it certainly fit the tone of the film. It fit very, very, very well. In the end, not something that I think I will go back to very often. Same with the movie. Maybe I'll watch it again on small screen sometime where I don't have to deal with shaky cam on an oversized screen. It's just felt depressing to me. And my current mood is like, that's the last thing I need right now. I wanted something uplifting and exciting and something that was going to kind of thrill me and not be such a heavy weight.
Oh, foolish Christopher, it's a bad score. Science costs lives.
Of course it does. But you see how they did it in The Right Stuff? They just like blew people up and crashed people here and there, but they did it with Bill Conti heroism. Like, sorry, guy,
well,
you're
here
dead.
They were like, well, they blew up. They blew up. It is sad. And everyone's sad. And this is a woman who lost her husband. And look, those kids, they don't have a dad now. It's
it was
NASA.
Overwhelming. It was quite overwhelming. So again, not a commentary on the quality of the score. Just didn't fit my expectations. So I found myself a little bit disappointed. And we can go into more detail of those things as we go into the spoiler section of the film and the score. Let's talk about a little bit more detail of anything we didn't talk about before that would be spoilery, but spoiler for real life, I guess. I didn't read the book.
He made it to the moon.
It's like I had no idea. What was going to happen.
Where was Stanley Kubrick accurate? In all of this?
Oh, he was there. He was in the, what was the name of that that thing they docked with? The what was the name of that thing?
The Aegeus?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in there.
He was blatantly there.
So I'll just say this. One thing that did contribute to probably my not experiencing the film in the best way possible was there were two older gentlemen a couple seats down from me. And here in Orlando, you never know. These people might work at NASA or retired from NASA, but they were having like full-blown conversation and commentary at full volume at many points of the film. And it was very, 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 very irritating and distracting. But they're like, they're probably like in their 80s. And I'm like, I'm not going to go and tell these old guys who might have known these guys to please refrain from, like, for instance, one guy's like, oh, he's going to die. I'm like, come on, dude.
To like, be fair, he was probably right.
He was, but I mean, if I didn't know already, I'd be like, dude, come on, you can't. So Neil Armstrong going down the ladder, and he's like, before he gets down the ground, one of the guys is like, one small step for man, one giant leap for... I'm like, dude, what are you doing? At full volume, full voice. I'm like, you can't just start saying stuff like that.
I want to go have that screening now.
If he was saying like insider commentary stuff, then that would have been interesting. Like, oh no, Neil didn't say that.
I would have given anything for you to have said spoilers.
I would have probably got everyone mad at me for shushing an old man. And then at the end, he's like, you know, those two divorced.
Like, they did. Okay. It's true. He was like sneaking around with the woman he ended up marrying afterwards. It was like a...
Yeah, but you know, it was 38 years later.
It was.
That's what's weird about it. It's like, gosh, you made it 38 years. Couldn't you have just kept going? I mean, what more, you know...
Yeah. Well, you know, they were making it clear they're separated by the glass. Like, okay, but the guy just blurting that out, I'm like, dude, come on.
Yeah, that all didn't happen until the 90s.
Yeah, right? And he didn't say that like at the end. He said that like when they introduced her to the story.
Oh no!
Like, you know, those two divorced. Like, well, we do now. Thank you, sir.
How many marriages were destroyed by that mission? I think two survived. If I remember.
Yeah. And the rest just perished.
Well, no, there were obviously the sad deaths, but there were also the rest of it was like only two of them did not get divorced.
I mean, I can't imagine the stresses that put on a marriage. I mean, I can't even.
The line that she had where she says, you know, I married Neil because he was going to do, and she gives this whole thing and you're like, oh, you are not where you thought you were going to be. You know what I mean? You can feel the pain and you're like,
sure.
And every one of those wives that I thought that was a really great inclusion was the feed, her listening to the feed, the radio feed. And then he's like, cut the feed. And you can't imagine. I can't imagine being
a spouse
and all of a sudden that's cut. I mean, I thought her great line, you're just boys building balsam. I was just like,
yeah,
go for it.
Yeah, man. I liked her a lot. I thought Claire Foy did a great job of portraying her. Let's talk about some of the standout tracks in the film or on the soundtrack itself. Dane, what's one or two of yours?
Well, the two of my standout favorite tracks on there. I mean, I do like Justin's score as well, but the two of the tracks that stood out to me were Lunar Rhapsody. Which I would not have known this existed without the film, but it was actually Armstrong's favorite song. And
it's a great song.
Yeah, and I feel like the theremin in the score is a link back to that. Like it's him. Justin, you know, drawing attention to and linking us back to that. That was like...
Was there a theremin in that song?
Yeah, it's how it opens.
Okay.
But it's a theremin. It sounds like a theremin to me. Maybe I'm dead wrong, but...
I have to listen.
I thought there was a connection between the theremin and that and the theremin used throughout. It was like a way to sort of, you know, tie them together instrumentally. So I thought that was cool. And then Whitey's on the Moon is killer. Mm-hmm. That song is awesome. I love it. But it is historically inaccurate to put it in these movies about
that
moon
landing.
Oh, yeah,
it was an anachronism, yeah.
It came out in 1970, so it had nothing to do with any of the protests at the time. So it's just annoying.
Maybe they got an early promo. They got an early promo.
An early LP release.
A single on a 78 single.
So I mean, so that part just bugs me, but it's a great, I love that song. It definitely gives perspective to the whole thing, right? Like it gives you a view of it, but it's just not accurate to put it in there.
Yeah.
I thought the docking waltz is proof of Justin's skill set, right?
Yes.
It's beautiful. For sure. And it's idiomatically perfect.
Just the sound and the visual aesthetic of that entire sequence is...
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, 2001?
Yeah, oh, totally.
Anyone?
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, okay, I'm with that. Yeah. I'm with that.
But he does it with his own thing, right? So it's...
Well, sure.
Yeah. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, it's not straight up Strauss, but it's... I mean, you can clearly be like... I can see the Pan Am space flight. I can...
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah. And it's the 50th anniversary of 2001, so it's even more perfect.
True.
I love it.
That's great.
Was that this year or last year?
I think that's this year.
This year.
They did a thing at Lincoln Center.
All right, okay. Yeah, I thought that was quite brilliant. And that was one of the pieces that definitely stuck out to me as well. The theremin, though, let's go back on that. You know, I found that oddly distracting.
Really?
Yeah. Because you know, a lot of times it's playing the Karen theme, his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what are you saying with that? You know what I mean?
I think he's saying what you think he's saying.
I'm saying I don't know what he's saying.
Well, it's...
She's an alien?
No, I think he's saying that it's this unnatural thing. Like he's in this grief experience, and this theremin, it's not a beautiful grief. It's not a beautiful thing he's dealing with. It's a horrible thing he's dealing with. So the theremin thins it out. It's like it's not human. It's not, you know what I mean? It's like it's otherworldly.
Karen also begins this really pronounced through line of loss that holds throughout the film, and the theremin comes back with other instances of loss, like with, you know, the Gemini accident and...
Does it come back with Apollo 1?
Yeah, it does, and it comes back in the contingency statement cue.
It just doesn't evoke... a sense of loss to me. It evokes the otherworldliness. It makes me think of aliens.
Well,
that
is the other thing. It does evoke the time period and what people thought of space at that time, which I think fits pretty well.
Did they think of space, or do they think from the creature from outer space, or you know, or that sort of thing?
I hear what you're saying, Chris.
Like science fiction out of space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to we're going to the moon. You know. Different vibe to me, but
well,
it just,
I think
it
the
just
contrast of you know what people think of you know going to the moon and what actually going to the moon entails.
You think that there? Wait, say that again.
I think it helps with the contrast of you know what the public thinks of you know going to the moon. You know, it's. Out of this world and what that actually entails.
Yes, I see. Yeah. So you're thinking that you're saying that, or are you saying that the people of that time, that they may have felt that way about going to the moon, that the theremin would have communicated that feeling
to them in the late 60s. There was a huge, you know, Star Trek started in this period, and
was using
sci-fi was huge, and it was adventure, and going to the moon symbolized something huge to that. And the theremin was used in those sci-fi pictures. It sort of created this weirdness and a sense of wonder. And here, I think it takes it to a more human scale, because it sounds like a voice in the way he uses it.
It does.
Right.
Yeah, it does.
See, it would have been, I guess,
I don't know.
The thought I had was, as I was, you know, after seeing the film and listening to the album again, if you'd have had a little girl's voice, that would have been the James Horner touch, right? You'd have had a little girl's voice that would always have been echoing. We'd all have known it's he's remembering his little girl. And then it would have been too
emotional. I would have loved it.
Yeah, I would have too. But I'm just saying that I found this to be a little bit more. I think the thing about the film that I took from it is, if you go back to Wright stuff, if you go back to Apollo 13, if you go back to all of those, there's this glory in it.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, even the grief that's in those films has a glory and a hope to it. And mm-hmm. this was otherworldly, as if to say, what Neil Armstrong is experiencing, what this loss is not normal. These are not normal things we're supposed to be experiencing. They're normal things we experience, but they don't make us feel normal. Do you know what I'm saying? They make us feel abnormal. They bring us down. They don't bring us up. So it's like cold, and it was a cold.
But loss is a normal thing, though.
No, but I understand what you're saying. But in terms of the storytelling that we've seen before, right, those losses do have sadness. They do have grief to them, but they never have, like, that coldness, right?
True.
And I think that's the touch I thought that the theremin brought, as opposed to bringing in that little girl voice. Yeah. You know, or bringing in a wailing, you know, a voice either, you know.
Yeah, I think Dane is saying is, like, losing three of your friends in one go, your colleagues in one go, that's not normal. And then, you know, within the same project, you have, you know, your pilot colleague crashes and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand it.
Yeah.
It's just the theremin doesn't evoke that in me. The theremin, as you've described it, it is cold. It makes me think of otherness.
Well, right, so you're thinking of the worlds.
The other thing was...
It makes me think of those things.
The other thing is that Neil Armstrong was kind of known for his detachedness. Like, that was his nature.
Yeah, that I can get with.
That was actually one part of this film. I didn't like that. And I went home and was like, what? No, he wasn't that kind of person. And then I read that, you know, his family loves Ryan Gosling's portrayal of their dad. And I was like, holy crap.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, he really was this way. This is not, you know.
That's why he was the perfect choice to play him, because that's Ryan Gosling. I mean, it's just he nailed it. But see, interestingly, you know, the Armstrong theme is much more, much warmer, mm-hmm. much more approachable than, I don't even know what I guess it's Karen's motif when it's played on the theremin. That's what feels odd and cold to me. But Armstrong theme is like...
It's intended to feel cold. It's intended to feel opposite of the Armstrong theme. It's supposed to be this thing.
Yeah, but she was an Armstrong. I don't know. It just feels awkward to me.
But it's not
for some
strictly
reason.
Karen's theme.
It's not. Because they introduce it not on the theremin, but very beautifully, very subtly, I think, in the second track. But as it goes through the film, you hear it a lot on the theremin. And it's just an interesting... I was very intrigued by its employment, but didn't find myself connecting to it. I just kind of found myself listening to it and seeing it from afar, like, this is kind of strange, interesting, but disconnected for some reason. What other tracks did you guys find as ones that stood out?
Well, you mentioned the Armstrongs, so that's one of my favorites. It begins mm-hmm. with this little fugue on a harp. And then it becomes really familiar in the film.
Yes, they use it a lot.
And then it recapitulates in this huge orchestral way during the moon landing. And then it layers with that grief theme. And I love everything about it.
it did feel like Johan Johansson's A Theory of Everything theme. It very, very much reminded me of that.
Yeah, it's...
I wouldn't be surprised if that was temped in there. I mean, it's very, very close.
Very lilting. I liked it. And I'm waiting on responses from Justin Hurwitz to tell me more about it because I want to know more about this. Because
I'm sure it's got a good story.
Well, I really like the way it was used and sort of grew in its variations. Oh gosh, and at the end, when they're in quarantine, it comes back and has a variation of the grief motif in there too when they're separated. Oh, I love it.
I thought the first doc, it's interesting the more modern things he pulls in that are, you know, things that are very interstellar-y, shall we say, kind of the ticking clock. And I guess that's, what's the name of that? The other Hans Zimmer one, the recent one, with that ticking clock sort of
Dunkirk.
Idea behind it. Dunkirk. I've stricken it from my brain somehow.
How could you? It's so amazing.
I've only seen it the once. So there's that and that and spin. Just that whole sequence was like I had to stop looking at the screen because again I'm on IMAX, and when that thing starts to spin and they just keep that shot on it when it's zipping, I'm like, could they really spin that fast and not just be like eviscerated or something? I was like, this is impossible that this is spinning that fast.
They do show them in the men's room afterwards.
No, not that.
Oh, not that.
When they're actually in docking. Space and they dock and then it starts spraying.
Yeah.
That whole sequence was so intense.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just like, I'm not even in the thing and I can't take it. I'm watching a movie of it and I can't take the spin. It was absolutely, I don't know, it was overwhelming to me. But those instances all had very interesting use of more modern composing techniques, more kind of Hans Zimmer things, which I thought was interesting to hear those come into this score as well. It's got so many different elements from so many different places. It's such a interesting score in that way. I mean, you've got waltzes and you've got theremins and then you've got Hans Zimmer-y type things all mixed together. Makes for a really, really interesting score.
And plucked upright bass.
Yes. I was going to talk about Houston and the multi-axis trainer, which sort of brings in those engineering motifs, and it's all very precise and businessy. I love it.
Yeah, no, I just love that riff. Bum, bum, bum. Bum, 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 bum. I was like, what?
Yeah.
What is that? Where is that? It's just so cool. And then by the end of it, you're like, this is perfect. I can't imagine it any other way. Yeah, so good.
Yeah, all those things. It sounds very mathematical. And
Any others?
The launch, the Apollo 11 launch track is my favorite track on the album.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so the way they did that in the theater and how the drum part of that sort of rolls and melts into the sound of the rockets. Loved that. That was like my sound editing crown jewel there, because I'm like, the drums have a purpose. And
it nice. And the landing and the end credits, I think those are the longest pieces on the soundtrack. They're some of the best. They're some of the best tracks for sure.
He did such a great job of keeping it intimate and small. And then, like, when you got to the landing or all these other places, you're like, you know, it felt natural when it would go big. It didn't feel like, it didn't disconnect from what he had already stated and what he was already doing earlier. It just felt right for, you know, the sequence, and it felt exactly correct. Which could have been, it could have been the other, all of this could have been the other way. It could have had all these big disconnections between the waltz and the spinning and the this and the that, and it just all flowed seamlessly together, which was amazing.
Agreed. Anything else about the film or the score that might be spoilery that you want to bring up?
Just that this is a score that I keep on hearing things when I listen to it. And I need to listen to the full version of the score. Okay, so what they sent me was like a 15-track thing. It was like a 15-track promo thing instead of like the, you know, whole thing. So I have yet to listen to the whole thing.
Most of the tracks are super short. I mean, really short.
Yeah, that sounds
really,
about
really short. The launch, landing, and end credits, I think, are all around 5 minutes. But all the other ones are like under 2 minutes, maybe. I mean, most of them, they're really short.
Yeah, I think I have all of the ones that are more than 2 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, I was surprised to see how short the tracks were. All right. Well, as we wrap up, maybe we just make a quick comparison, at least on our own way, how this film fits in with or compares or contrasts to some of the famous ones we've already mentioned. Apollo 13, The Right Stuff, From the Earth to the Moon. How does this film and the score compare to those? How does it fit in? How does it mix with those? Kristen, what do you think about that?
I think this is definitely more intimate. That's for sure. So I haven't seen The Right Stuff.
Oh, holy moly. I mean, it's still not worse than not seeing Godfather.
I think Dane's actually dying right now.
I can't breathe.
If someone
you didn't react that way when I said I didn't see The Godfather.
I know. No, well,
I just...
That's worse, I guess.
I know, and I have an Ed Harris thing, too, so I don't even know why.
Oh, my word.
But to me, The Right Stuff is just that New Kids on the Block song, so I...
Oh, no.
Get that out of your head.
Oh, wow.
Cast that from your memory.
Wow.
So I don't have that basis for comparison.
Oh, my gosh. You have to see that.
I know.
While you're recuperating, just pop that on some kind of way.
Yeah.
It's such a good movie. Such a good movie. Such a great score.
So I don't have that basis for comparison.
Okay.
But I do have Apollo 13.
Well, that's
once
good.
Again feeding into my Ed Harris thing.
Yes.
That definitely had, you know, more of the, I mean, it's Horner, so.
Yeah.
It was that's
and then
that's
from the Earth to the Moon. Did you see that?
It's definitely that more in your series. Face, and yet somehow gets in your heart.
Oh man, yeah, yeah. I mean, I didn't. Did you cry in this movie?
Did I? No, but I definitely did one of these.
What's that?
Like
stopping yourself from crying. Coughing into your arm? What is
no, it was there are points where I like kind of hide behind my notebook, I guess.
Oh. From fear or intensity?
I think it's more intensity.
Okay.
I don't know. It takes a lot to get me to cry in the movies.
Oh, right. See, I wasn't tempted at all to cry in this one. But I did. I think the first time I saw Apollo 13, I think I cried. Even though I knew it was going to happen. Even though they're going to be okay.
Book. I read Jim Lovell's book before I saw the movie. And then when I saw the movie, and I didn't cry when I read the book. When I saw the movie, I bawled like a baby.
That's James Horner, man. That's James.
It's one of my favorite scores of all time, Apollo 13. I mean, what's it called?
That final huge long suite.
Yeah.
From the descent all the way. I mean, that was just.
Oh my gosh! And his son sitting in the schoolroom, waiting to know if his dad survived. You're like, who the heck sends their kid to school on a day like that? That's horrible. Oh man, I bawled like a baby. Cried so hard. I love that score. And from the Earth to the Moon, you know, Michael Kamen captured that. I think the difference in this one, you know, The Right Stuff is like Americana, Western, cowboys. This is just a continuation of the Western American dream. Yeah. You know, these guys are cowboys riding their horses and, you know, doing whatever. And then Apollo 13 is about the human experience, right? It's like, oh, we all came together and we all solved the problem. We brought our boys home, you know? And it's in the way they're all filmed, like The Right Stuff is filmed like a Western. It looks like a Western. And Apollo 13 is bright. All the red, whites, and blues are very crisp.
Failure is not an option.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know.
And is that not, first man is like, we're going to fail and fail and fail and fail until we make it to the moon.
I mean, he said it. We have to fail here on the ground so we don't fail up there.
Yeah. You know, those films, and even From the Earth to the Moon, it's all about the history of it and the glory of it and the fun of it. And there's like one episode that really deals with like the family. And this movie says, wait a minute, we're going to take a deep dive.
Take that family.
And we're going to look right at this, and we're going to look at it under a microscope, and it's going to get intense, and you're going to feel this on a level you did not expect. And it just makes you remember that all of the accomplishments we have in humanity are just people going through normal things, you know?
Sure.
And that's, we don't get that. You don't get that when you go to, you know, you read your high school history book. You don't get that story. You don't get that, you know, Neil Armstrong's dealing with the grief of his child and his wife can't connect with him emotionally and his boys don't know how to relate to him. I mean, you don't get that when you read the story. You just hear this man was brave and strong and he was a great mathematician and scientist and everyone should strive to be like him. And you think, man, there's real life here, like real hardcore, painful stuff this guy's going through. So I would much prefer to watch an Apollo 13 or The Right Stuff, and I would much, in my heart of hearts, enjoyed listening to Apollo 13 over and over and over and over and over again. But this one hit me hard. Like, and I just think it was beautiful. I think it was beautiful.
Yeah. I think it's very inventive, as I've mentioned before. I think the combination of instrumentation, techniques, and all of that in First Man is really, really intriguing. And it fits this particular film, but as I mentioned before, I'll just repeat myself. You know, it's not one that I think that I'll return to just on a sheer listening experience very often, maybe at one track here or there. Unlike The Right Stuff, Apollo 13, unfortunately, there's never been a real release of From the Earth to the Moon, which is ridiculous.
I have it in Blu-ray.
No, I mean soundtrack. Oh, there's a soundtrack that has like three tracks from Michael Kamen, which is like, hello, how many episodes?
There were other composers on it too. It wasn't just him, so.
Oh, really? Didn't know that.
I think he did like the first one.
But they never released the score. Then,
right. I think it's because they had different guys involved.
Oh, that's awful.
How about comparing it to Capricorn 1?
Oh, gosh, I just rewatched that recently. That movie is crazy. That is a crazy town movie. Jerry Goldsmith, as usual, doing a great job. But, man, that movie's nuts. It's a different movie. It's not incidentally about the space program, but it's really about Neil Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's his story. And so it's much more, as you guys have said, intimate, introspective, all of those things. So it's a nice companion to these others, but it's not of the same ilk, really. It doesn't really intend to be. The marketing certainly marketed it as Apollo 13, that type of thing. If you rewatch that trailer, there's a lot of stuff in that trailer that's not in the movie, by the way. There's like his house on fire and stuff. I'm like, wait, did I fall asleep during the movie? When did his house catch on fire? I mean, there's some stuff in that trailer that's not in the film. But it's certainly marketed towards the action adventure-y, you know, we got to do this thing kind of an approach, which is a sliver of the film, but certainly not the heart of it. Anything else you guys want to talk about in terms of First Man and how it fits in with the, what do you call that genre, this genre? The NASA space adventure genre?
I think it's the...
Space race genre?
I think it's got to be space race. I like that.
Yeah.
Like I said,
This is more like a psychological biopic.
Yeah, this
it
is.
Right.
This is. But what is the, you know, right stuff, Apollo 13... Earth to the Moon, space race, I guess.
I
guess
really want to see a film about Yuri Gagarin. Like they,
I think
like
there is one.
Yeah, but like in this, you know, done like these, right? Like where you have, you know, you can kind of feel the adventure and the excitement of from that perspective.
There is one. I don't know. I think it was kind of a low budget deal that was done. I don't even know where it was done. I think it was done in Europe somewhere. But there is a movie about him out there, and I'm sure it's just a matter of time they'll do something. There is one other score I'd like to mention. If you've ever been to, and you guys may have been there, did you ever go to the Kennedy Space Center?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
There, the music that was done for the Saturn V Apollo section,
you can get that.
Well, not anymore, but there was a CD for it. I have it. I interviewed the composer David Newper. That music is fantastic. I mean, he was clearly inspired by Apollo 13 and all of those things.
Awesome.
It's a fantastic score.
Oh, I'm so jealous that you have that.
I tried to reach out to him recently because I haven't heard. He's done a lot of documentaries and theme parky type of things, or museum type things, but I don't think he's very active anymore. Or no, he was a part of Sound Deluxe way back in the day.
Okay.
I don't know if Sound Deluxe still exists, but if you're able to, maybe they released it on Spotify or on iTunes or something now, but I don't think you can get the CD anymore. But I would look it up.
Okay.
David Newper is the composer, and it fits right alongside these other ones.
It does.
Perfectly.
Kristen, if you ever are down there, it's cooler than going to Disney World.
Oh, it's fantastic.
My dad used to live in Melbourne, but I've never, yeah.
It's unbelievable. I couldn't believe how enjoyable the Kennedy Space Center tour was. It was not what I was expecting. I thought it would be dull and whatever. It is mind-blowingly good. And there were things that weren't in this movie that I wanted there because I went on that tour. So I had information that, you know, like the landing, like they were completely lost when they landed on the moon. They didn't really give you that. They were completely lost. They were not where they were supposed to be at all. Totally
scared out of their
minds. I sort of
gathered
that
from the film, though.
Yeah, but they didn't really address, hey, you guys are lost. Like they were freaking out.
Well,
it looked like he was going to go into that crater.
And I was like, they're not where they're supposed to be.
But I mean, it just, that tour is unbelievably good. Unbelievably good. I cannot highly recommend it enough. And that, I'm so jealous that you have that because the music was, I remember the whole time I was there thinking, this music is awesome. The whole time I was there.
Yeah, the last time I went, it was no longer there. When I went and looked in their gift shop to see if they still had
I bet it's on eBay.
I don't know why.
Right now, we are making the price of it on eBay tick up.
You know? Hey, hopefully so. I have a copy to put on eBay then. all right. Well, I think that's going to do it for episode 119 of the Soundcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We'd love to know what you thought of Justin Hurwitz's score for First Man. Let us know by whatever means you'd like to let us know. Hit us up on email at soundcast@tracksounds.com or on Twitter at audiosoundcast or at tracksounds. Or you can leave us a voicemail on our SpeakPipe widget on our site, thesoundcast.com. I almost said .net. Dane, how can people find and follow you?
You can find me on Twitter at Maestro Dane. You can also get my SoundCloud, Dane Walker Music. You can go to my website, danewalkermusic.com, and I have the same branding at YouTube. It's Dane Walker Music there, too.
Awesome. And Kristen, how can people find and follow you? And submit stories for your volume that's due today.
Oh, those can be
maybe not
those
the last
can be
part.
Emailed at Kristen at filmscoremonthly.com. I don't pay.
Okay.
The easiest way to find me is on Twitter at KB for now. That's KBFORNOW. You can find Film Score Monthly online at FSMOnlineMag.com. Also on Twitter at FSMOnlineMag. I'm currently working on the October issue, but we have a September issue out, which is pretty darn good.
That's the rumor.
That's the rumor I'm spreading about my own work.
Somebody's got to spread it. All right. And if you want to follow me, you can do so on Twitter at C. Coleman. That's going to do it for this episode. Thank you for listening. And until our next one, we want to say, may the notes be with you.
The one I've got is the one on...